Okay, this I'm actually, I'm just going to talk half the time. So I just started my timer to let me know when my time's up. And then Ted Hartzig will give the second half. I was one of the co-organizers of this symposium, so thanks everybody for coming. This afternoon, or after the break now, we're going to, this morning we had some really great talks on ecology and how these soils got, urban soils got to be where they are. Now this after the break, we're going to kind of focus on, you know, dealing with these, what we've been given and how do we work with these soils and some of the urban projects that, that we deal with in these urban settings. So I heard some good comments this morning. You know, Sharon just talked about the desert soils and how some of these are, as they become converted to urban soils. When I started working with urban soils, when I got to the Dallas Research Center, which is where I'm at, you know, I still work with urban soils, and well, what does that really mean? From, you know, what I've found is it's almost kind of a management issue. If you're looking at the current people that are living in the city, it's the way you manage those soils. And Sharon made a good point this morning, which I have observed. You know, people that live in a city have their piece of land, and they like to work with that land. And their yard is their land and their little kingdom, and they like to do stuff. They want to do something to those soils to make them better. So the issues I'm dealing with a lot are things that people add to their soil. So this is very typical. In a city, as it gets converted from, typically from where I'm at, agricultural land converted then to urban land, residential. You can see, let's see here, get a, there we go. So one of the first things they do is they strip off the soil that's there, the good soil, to build the house. And this will probably be hauled off some point and discarded. Or there's actually some dark soil here that looks pretty good. But for the most part, you're going to end up with soil that's not worth, it's going to be difficult to get things established. And as a consequence, with time, you know, you put in your grass or whatever landscape you're putting in, and it's going to look fairly poor over time because you don't have a good soil resource. You're not starting with a good soil. Another situation in the cities is where you're working, putting in, for example, a plaza, something like this, where you know there's either no soil there, or the soil was originally under a parking lot, or they've hauled it all off. And then I frequently a landscape architect will contact me and say, well, what, you know, give me a recipe for a soil that I should use here. So this is real typical. So this is one project I was kind of involved with, where that's exactly what they called. They needed to plant these trees in this plaza here, and they said, well, give us a recipe for a soil. I mean, they want you to tell them how much sand, silt, clay. Rather than working with a native soil that's there for one reason or another, they're going to bring in a whole new soil that they're actually going to design or going to blend it. So this, I've tried to capture this idea of what's the difference between soil scientists. You know, we typically have worked with agricultural, natural soils versus an urban setting. And what happens, it's really a matter of the amount of land that you're working with. So I kind of made this graph to try to capture that. The left axis, it just shows, you can look how big the piece of land is. So you can, if you look at the Bureau of Land Management National Parks, they manage really big pieces of land. And as you then you go down smaller in scale, and this is a log scale, you get to smaller parks. At some point you get to a farm, a wheat farm. You can see how big Central Park is compared to that. Then you get, you know, as you get smaller and smaller, you're getting more urbanized. And you're finding things like hobby farms. And then you get to a scale where essentially you get into the city and you're working with yards. You're working with, for example, sports fields. Soccer fields are very important in urban settings. And then you get even smaller down to the home, individual home, and you're working with just beds or the tree well that we saw where we had the tree planted. So the size of the land that you're working with is getting smaller and smaller. Now, the opposite of that is how much effort do you put into managing that land? And that's what's, when I started working with urban soils, I saw that's really what's different here is people are putting a lot of effort into, they've got their little piece of land and are putting a lot of effort into that. So they want to add things to that soil to make it work better in their minds. So this slide, it's kind of the same concept. I used this before I made the other one, and this one may be clearer, but it's kind of the same thing. When you have a large amount of land, and things like federal lands, ranches, farms. Down in the bottom, you see the level of inputs going into that land, and it's really pretty small. If you have a lot of land, about all you can do is you can add fertilizer, you know, you manage your residues. Smaller farms, they may actually use a little bit of manure or compost, but you don't have a lot. There's not a lot of external inputs going into that. But if you get, as the land area gets smaller, more urbanized, in other words, that you're managing, the number of, the level of inputs really goes up. So you look in urban areas, they're adding things, they're adding high rates of compost. They're not adding, you know, 5 tons an acre or something like that. They're adding, they talk about 2 inches or 3 inches or 6 inches of compost that's being tilled into the soil. And then also inorganic amendments was a new one for me. In the city, there's things that people want to add to their soil that's it's not organic matter. It's minerals and things that they can, I've got some examples of those coming up. So this is the area that I work with in Texas. I work in Dallas, which is up here. This is part of what's called the Blacklands Prairie. So the thing about the Blacklands Prairie, it's not a huge part of the state, but it's where all the people live in the state of Texas. Dallas, Fort Worth up here, Waco, Austin, and then San Antonio, where we're here right now. So this is a very highly Interstate 35. In fact, the most recent census shows that just most of the population growth in Texas is kind of right along here, also down in the Rio Grande Valley down with the, on the border. So there's a lot of people that are affected by the soils that we have in the Blackland Prairies, and it is the Houston Black is one of the predominant types of soils, and it is in fact the state the soil of Texas. And what it is, it's a, you can see the description here: fine montmorillic thermocutic hapless dirt. So it's a vertisol. So lots of clay in this soil. So, and you can see the profile of it there. So it's actually nice, a very good soil. But the, when people, especially Dallas, where a lot of people have moved in from outside of Texas, from other locations, they refer to this as black gumbo. And so, and they want to know, well, how can I make this soil better to work with? Because they want to be able to go out and dig around with it whenever they want to and work with it. So they call it black gumbo, and in their minds, it's a very poor soil. So a lot of the work that I've done is amendments, working with amendments for clay textured urban soils. And these are some of the things that people, you can add to your soil in the urban in the urban setting. There's organic materials, which are always very good. Compost, there's different types, vegetative-based, manure-based, peat moss, manures, mulches, these things. Then there's these inorganic materials, which were kind of new to me before I came to Dallas and started working. And these are the things that people want to add to their clay textured soil to make it easier to work with, make it drain better. Most of the work I've done is with material expanded clays and shells. But on the organic side, as I mentioned, there's compost, and we've had some long-term studies going with compost where we put in, and we tell people if you use compost when you're establishing your landscape up front, you'll have some long-term benefits. This was 6 years into a study after we added the compost. I'll just kind of point out quickly, this is where we didn't have any compost. So you look at these shrubs here versus down here where we added 2 inches. This was just a one-time application, and it's 6 years later. So, and then in these particular, so this is turf with no compost, turf with compost. And then we add, in this case, we add, there's no fertilizer applied after we put in these landscapes. But this particular year, we did split the plot and add some fertilizer. So you can see the response to the nitrogen. I'm going to speed it up because I'm about at the end of my 10 minutes. These are the, it's either some of the inorganic materials that you work with. So, and these are things people ask me about them all the time. These are the things they want to add to their clay soil to make it easier to work with. So expanded shell is a very common one. This is used a lot. This is also used in green roof growing medias that Bruce is going to talk about later this morning. Lava sand and green sand, these are things you can go and buy at the store and people use them. Whether they should or not is another question, but this is things that urban homeowners, they want to know, should they be buying these things and using them in their soils. There's a local organic guru in Dallas that he promotes lava sand. And so, and if he has many followings, and they, so you get a lot of, if I give a seminar or something to the master gardeners, they want to, they ask about these things and they want to know about them. So that's expanded shell. This is what it looks like up close. The thing about expanded shells, it's porous. It's a vitrified material. It's, you make it by heating a shell to very high temperature, so it expands it and makes it porous like this. So it'll absorb water. but it has no cation exchange capacity. So it'll absorb water, and it'll absorb a lot of water really fast, and then a little bit of water over time. So actually, you can load this thing up with nutrients and grow plants in it. And this is a study where this is the expanded shell. They didn't add any fertilizer to it, and this was one where it was a 50-50 blend of the two, and this was expanded shell where I pre-treated it with fertilizer, but then I didn't add any fertilizer after that. That's the same material with lettuce growing in it. So it does have some properties where it will hold on to nutrients, and plants will be able to use those nutrients. So that is one property of it, but it does have a very low cation exchange capacity, so it won't hold on to those nutrients for very long. So I'm just going to wrap up with a couple more slides. So we got compost, we got expanded shell, these other ingredients. So there are situations where you can blend these things together and make some fairly decent growing medias. This is an example of where the blend expanded shell with some sandy loam soil and some compost to make a growing media. That's very similar to what I recommended they put into these tree wells in the Skeleton Plaza in Richardson, Texas. I didn't know if it was going to work at the time, but they wanted a recipe, and they've been pretty happy with it. Another situation with expanded shell and urban soils, we have these big, you know, parking lots that sit empty most of the year. So one of the projects I've kind of been working with is to develop these soil mixes that can go in to these overflow parking areas where, and so this is essentially a mixture of shell with soil. And then the idea is that you get some infiltration here when it rains. You reduce the urban heat island effect. You have a grassy surface versus a paved surface, and it looks nicer as well. I'm going to skip and let then turn it over to Ted, and he's going to do the second half.
Nothing like people bouncing up and down during a presentation. What I wanted to be able to follow from John with is in looking at the practical applications of soil management in urban environments. And some of that, and I'm talking from a lot of my own experience here, is first off, let's look at some of the soil restoration challenges we have in the urban environment. Because frankly, I think as has been said in a couple presentations now, you really don't restore soil in the urban environment. You just try to rehabilitate it to the best of your ability. But when we're doing this, what I have found is more often than not, we have to go in and fix problems that have been created by whether it be other professionals or just by the fact the simple act of construction or disturbance, whatever it may be. As we go into, let's say, rehabilitate that soil, first off, we have to look at what are we looking at for soil performance objectives? What are the soil, you know, how can we get soil to replace perhaps soils that have been so drastically disturbed they are going to be non-usable. Soil preparation, the subgrade, and then placement of soils, whether they are the inherent soils at the site or if you're importing soils, becomes very, very important. And then what we have to do, which very often nobody does, is we have to monitor that post-placement soil to see how it is performing. Do we need to go back and maybe correct a few features because maybe we forgot something or maybe just that balance is not performing as to what is expected, not by us necessarily as soil scientists, but also people in that urban community. So looking at the soil performance objectives, this is very, very important. Are you looking at a landscape? Is your soil management just purely for a landscape? And within that, and I was talking to Sharon at the break, is it a native landscape? Are you going to be reintroducing native plants? This does not necessarily mean a biodiverse native population. It could be just a selected few native plants, but they will interact with that soil much different than if we have a conventional landscape where we bring in exotic plants, plants that are not native to the area and that we have to have a lot of intensive management, and also that also affect that soil differently. Stormwater management is huge. That's one of the big items, one of the big issues in nearly all urban environments, and soil management is a very critical component of that. It's a very critical component that most engineers have very, very little understanding of, let alone landscape architects. And that's not to belittle any of their professions. They just don't have that knowledge of the soil chemistry, biology, and the physics and all the interactions that work together. Is that soil going to be for structural support? Is it going to support a bridge? Is it going to support a road? Is it going to support a building? Is it all of the above? So these are performance objectives as we go looking at soils and soil management in urban environments that we have to look at very critically. Procurement. Are we going to use the soil that is inherent native to the site? Ideally, yes. If we can, use the soil that is there because that is the soil that has adapted itself to that specific area, to that climate, to the vegetation that you'll be bringing in. I have a site in Dallas where they pre-spec'd bringing in a soil because they did not think that that Houston black clay that John just spoke about was going to be any good for any type of plant. Whereas in reality, that Houston black clay was some of the best soil I have ever seen. And I went around even instructing bulldozer operators how beautiful it was. Save it. Don't get rid of it. So we had that lesson, but we were stuck with importing soils. So if we have to get an imported soil, which often we do, can we find a suitable borrow source? Where is it? How much is it going to cost to get it? Does it in of itself have inherent variability? And are we going to be bringing in pollutants and other contaminants, both chemical as well as biological? Quality assurance is huge because you might spec a certain soil type to meet a specific condition that you need, whether it be structural, for landscape, for stormwater management. Invariably, 99% of the population says soil is soil. It doesn't matter what I bring in. And that is the biggest mistake that is made on many of these site restorations. If you blend separate components, that can be a real problem if you don't blend them correctly. A lot of people like to blend in sand to loosen up a clay. But if they don't blend in enough sand, they're going to get adobe, and it's going to be harder than whatever they had before. It'll be like brick. So a lot of people don't understand these situations. Also, if we are bringing in a soil, can you get it there? Are you going to be able to bring in a 20-yard truck into a small neighborhood? Or do you have enough trucks to bring it into a large operation? Site preparation and soil placement, these are all critical factors. You have to look at the grading plans. Are they realistic? How are we going to place it? Preparation of subgrades. More often than not, you've had a lot of heavy equipment running over that subgrade, and we are creating a very dense, highly compacted subgrade soil, which, dependent upon how much new soil you put on top or how much you're going to try and break that up, creates a very limited zone of root and biological activity that can support our plants. So looking at that, then we want to reproduce soil function. I put that picture in the lower right-hand corner because whoever prepared that soil at that site that I had to come in and fix later, they had a sandy site, and they thought, well, let's put in a planting-grade soil. So they put about 6 inches of a silty clay loam. The whole thing died. Could not support plants. They would try to plant grasses and it would die. Even in a wet year, they had a droughty condition. You only have 6 inches of moisture holding capacity. Everything below was excessively drained. Then it started eroding. The whole thing fell apart. They spent millions of dollars on that landscape trying to do that, and somebody made a grievous, horrible mistake. So reproducing soil function in the physical, the chemical, and the biological activities are critical. Reproduce the A horizon if you can, or let's say recreate whatever you can of A horizon. But then also to the subgrades, where you do have finer textured material going lower. Compaction, subsidence, slopes, they're all critical issues to be addressed. Again, this concept of quality assurance, it has to be monitored during construction as well as post. That post-placement QA is important. How is the vegetation performing? Is it doing as you require? For those of us who are soil scientists in the practicing realm, our clients are our bread and butter. And if the vegetation does not respond as people expect it to, they're going to come back to us, and boy, do they. So we have to know exactly how we're going to monitor, how we tweak, how we can move back and manage that soil to meet society's expectations of what that soil can support. Water management, again, is critical. If that soil does not hold water, if it sheds water, if it becomes too inundated with water, certain types of vegetation can or cannot grow. Structural stability, is it going to be highly erodible? Is it going to slump? Does it cave because there were too many voids below it? If it is on a roadbed, grade, are you going to have it slipping off? How was that soil placed? That's going to be very important. And then, as you monitor it, more often than not, corrective measures are necessary. I would like to think I'm the best dang soil scientist in the world, but we all know that's not. With a lot of my projects, I still go back and I have to do little tweaks and measures to fix compaction, erosion, things that we do not necessarily foresee. A case study. I got to make it quick. Stormwater BMP gardens in Omaha. Again, stormwater is a huge issue in many of these cities. EPA is mandating that they go to natural best management practices where they use infiltration of rainwater into the ground. They use native vegetation. So our objective was stormwater capture and infiltration. Normally, they send it down the drain down to the river, and if you ever saw the silts in Omaha, they're like sugar because once that stormwater hits a stream, it erodes it. I have seen swales erode into 40-foot deep canyons within 5 years. It's amazing. But they have, for the most part, in many places, a tight, silty clay loam. They call it, in Omaha, a gumbo. I think it's wonderful soil, but they can't work with it very easily. So our approach was to enhance soil quality and create supplemental infiltration. That took two approaches: enhancing that silty clay loam and planting native plants that we know over time will extend those roots downward. And if you know about Midwest prairie plants, those roots go very, very deep. And so they create a very porous, wonderful, even if it's a clay soil, beautiful soil, like we have actually in this Blackland prairie too. But the other part was to import a soil and create an infiltration zone to improve infiltration for the short term. So in those cases, what we wanted to look at is, can we have more of a sandy textured soil, but that would hold enough water to support plant life? Because if you just have plants, that sand is not going to support, is not going to have the nutrient base nor the water holding capacity. So with that, we added compost. We got a very nice mix, and the plants do great. This is just a picture of one of the BMPs that we did. We tried to use small equipment to minimize compaction. You can see in that second picture that little infiltration cell that I talked about of a sand and compost mix, 50-50. That base, typically BMPs, especially in Maryland where these things originated, say, oh, you can't go deeper than 1 foot. I go to about 2 to 2.5 feet because they do work very, very well with that depth if the water will go down. But also the plant selection is very critical. And this, the fourth picture then is after about 1 year with the native plants coming in with native prairie plants. Omaha highlights that BMP. They like it a lot because it functions very well. But with our post-construction monitoring, we found a few things. First off, the infiltration of water was too fast. That infiltration cell with that sand and compost, water zipped right through it. I'm sorry to say, but that went through. We did have a drainage pipe below it, so we plugged the drainage pipe to allow water to go through slower. There was compaction of subsoils. No matter how much we wanted to try to avoid it, these are urban soils. They were compacted. We have been going back and breaking those compaction layers up. So then we're looking for future designs. We're going to look at how do we modify these soil systems so even engineers know how to do it so that it's not going to be something that becomes a problem. The vegetation in this BMP has performed very, very well, even with compacted soil. So we know that native vegetation is that interaction of the soil and the water and the vegetation that is critical. I'm sorry, I keep going here. I'm going to go through. This is a case study. This is that Texas Blackland soil. They wanted to take it from flat to highly rolling, so we had to import soils. We did that. We brought in, instead of the Texas clay, we brought in a sandy loam. The sandy loam, because it's not native, had its own problems, but the vegetation is responding beautifully. The bottom left-hand corner is the Barrow source. That was taken about a month ago in the midst of one of the worst droughts in Texas history, but look at that vegetation in the background. It is still green as can be. So this soil that we brought in, it's not perfect, but it's a good mix that we're bringing into the site. Infiltration is slower. The soil settles more dense than anticipated. Typically, we'll see 90 to 95% compaction. It would be nice if it wasn't that dense, but it is. And we're looking at organic matter. Compost management is critical to the success of our soils. Future actions. We need more soil scientists in the process. Engineers don't understand it. Landscape architects have a pretty good idea, but even they still have a lot of questions. I really appreciate where they're coming from, though. We need to improve those understanding of soils among other professions so they know what they don't know, so they know not to make mistakes, so we have to go in and fix problems, and so then that they have that connection of how to connect soil to urban situations. And then, again, also increase soil scientists' roles in the planning of urban environments. Where, how we build our urban environments is highly critical and dependent upon how we do our soils. That's it.
Thank you.